Welcome to Mind, Brain, and Body with Dr. Michael John Kell. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. Now helping you live a more productive and fulfilling life, Dr. Michael John Kell.
Good morning, and I want to wish everyone out there a nice aloha, since we are going to be speaking about some ancient Hawaiian philosophical systems, HUNA to be exact, H-U-N-A. And today we're actually in Atlanta. Our guest who lives in Hawaii is actually giving a seminar in Newport Beach, California, so it's good for him because it'd be a lot earlier if it wasn't. But we're going to be talking to Dr. Matthew B. James, and we're going to be talking about the HUNA, which is the ancient sciences of conscious and energy healing of the Hawaiian Islands. And so good morning to you, sir, and I'm glad that you took some time off with your conference to talk to us, and hopefully
good morning.
You're energized for it.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, actually, I was really happy when, I can't remember who contacted us, but when I saw HUNA, because I haven't talked about HUNA ever on the show, and I haven't really even looked at it. It's probably about 30 years when my cousin mentioned to me when I was in university, and turned out my aunt was a big follower of HUNA, which was very, very interesting. But as I said before, you know, Matthew, the shows just kind of go where they do, and it's really a chance for people, you know, in the audience who are, I think, are quite well-educated and, you know, quite alert and interested in a lot of different things to really learn more about, you know, different aspects of how humans deal with their lives and different ways to think about it, different models. And so I don't, you know, I know you from your website, I know a little bit about HUNA, and so you're going to have to sort of, you know, kind of use your intuition to, I should say, your amakuha. To help guide us here. But I'm really happy about HUNA. So I went back and did a little bit of reviewing of my old books from Max Friedman Long, and those are old, and I'm going to get some flavor here. But I'm really excited about this because it really does have some applications, I think, to life in general that are not being appreciated by a lot of people in psychiatry and in other philosophical disciplines. And so maybe we just start with, you know, what HUNA is, and you know, and how it sort of first was found out, and you know, what you, and then get into what you guys are doing with it, and how you are using it in modern times for modern ailments.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. HUNA is a more modern label, actually, because the word HUNA means secret. So once you and I start talking about it, in ancient times in Hawaii, you wouldn't have called it HUNA anymore, but it is a modern label for an ancient system of empowerment and flexibility of the mind, body, and spirit. And HUNA specifically looks at how do your thoughts and emotions, how do they trickle down and affect the physical body? And how do you work with another person who is a practitioner in the arts of the physical realm, really assist someone in creating empowerment in their lives? So how do you work with a client to get the best results?
Actually, I just happen to have a copy here because, you know, the HUNA Code in Religions, which is one of Max Friedman Long's books. I actually like quite a lot. But when you just said that, I just flipped open to the dictionary, and I don't know what it was really called in the ancient days, but if you look down here, it should be like HONUA.
No, actually, in ancient times, it was called HO'OMANA. HO'OMANA means, on the surface level, literally to make energy. HO'O means to make. MANA means energy or life force energy. But when you put those two words together in the Hawaiian language, what it means is empowerment. Mm-hmm. And so it imagine psychology. To my PhD is in psychology. Imagine psychology if we talk about the word you mentioned earlier, aumakua, higher consciousness. If we talked about energy, and if we didn't sit around wondering if the mind and body are connected, we knew that they were. And I know we've gotten to that place now in Western thinking. I remember teaching 10 years ago, and people would still argue whether or not the mind and body are connected. Well, HUNA would be a system that of psychology, energy, higher consciousness, and spirit. And how does that trickle down and affect the physical? So HO'OMANA would be a more accurate label for it.
Well, actually, Hawaiian language, I mean, like I said, it's been 30 years, but I like that little dictionary in those old books. Because one thing that's nice about that particular language, it seems, I mean, it really is, the roots are really determine what the word means, which isn't always the case in, you know, in even Latin sometimes, I think. So it's really a nice kind of thing to go back. But, because as far as I know, I mean, it was William, you know, Tufts Brigham, you know, at the Bishop Museum over in Honolulu, I guess. I never visited it a long, long time ago, I guess, before the 1900s. you know, and then Max Dream Long came that really brought a lot of this to the forefront?
I actually have never studied Max Freedom Long's work. I've never read any of his books, and the only thing, and I mentioned this in my workshops, is that because of the publishing of his books, that title in Western minds has stuck, and that's one of the reasons why we've gone with it. But actually, my father was introduced to a person named Papa Bray, and Papa Bray was the son of the last practicing kahuna in the islands of Hawaii, according to the records that I've found at the University of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And Daddy Bray was his name. And Daddy Bray lived in Kailua Kona and claimed a 25th generation lineage of huna. And so the work that, as I understand it, the work that Max Freedom Long did was a lot more of a historical recording of it and working with and learning from people that practice this. The lineage that I teach from, which is now 28 generations, that started getting taught to me at the kitchen table. This is something that's in my family, and Hawaiian elders who are called kupuna, mm-hmm. and spiritual experts in the field routinely come to our workshop to assist in teaching, because we do teach not only with permission, but I think one of the things that's important in looking for someone with a spiritual teacher, someone as a spiritual teacher, is how do they have their credentials? Because getting credentialed in spiritual realm is a little bit different than getting credentialed in the academic realm. And so there is that level of credentials with regards to teaching this material.
Actually, I mean, what year, when you, you know, talk about the 20th generation, I mean, what year would, I guess, Daddy or Papa?
Papa's the son. I know it got confusing for me when I was a kid.
So it was the Daddy. When was he living?
Daddy Bray passed away in 1968, and Papa Bray, who shared the Bray family lineage of Huna to my father, I believe passed away in the late 80s, late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, it's worth reading. Max Freedom Long, the first two, I mean, it's actually three books, but I don't know what the first one's still out. One's like 1936, and their sciences, because a lot of it is from remembrance. It's been a long time, but it's really a lot about what, Dr. Brigham wrote down, you know, as he's, you know, he's tried to find the kahunas that were still alive, even, you know, at the turn of the century.
Oh, of course.
And it really is a good historical book, just about, you know, the healings and what they did, and he didn't really, you know, they didn't tell him how they did it and stuff, and... And then when Max Freedom Long came along, he was very frustrated because he took all his historical notes. And he's the guy who really got into the Hawaiian language,
mm-hmm.
and actually said it's really everything is really built into the language itself. And then maybe he got carried away later in the years. I don't know, because I don't keep track. You know, but it's
and really, that's some of the issue. I think that's some of the issue with Max Freedom Long in the islands of local Hawaiian practitioners. Is that that he did get a little bit carried away with it later on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was recently brought on to a couple of TV shows, Fox News and Geraldo, to talk about the whole unfortunate incident with what occurred with James Ray and the Sweat Lodge, because I had trained. James actually had come and taken some trainings with us. And so they asked, you know, we cut ties with him back about 4 years ago, because he began to bring in this mixed bag approach, and we had never given him permission to teach. And in fact, we've been now teaching for 20 years, and we still have not made a kumu. And routinely in a spiritual teaching, you got 10 to 15 years that you need to be in something before you could truly begin to teach it and understand it. And so, you know, I've been asked to talk about this whole Western approach where you take a couple of trainings, you read a book, you think you know something, and you take it to the next level. And I think there's a possible inherent danger in that you don't fully understand what it is that you're teaching. And you bring up a great point. Max was talking about the historical aspects, but he didn't know the how. And when you don't know the how, and you don't understand how that information does trickle down to a specific technique, you do kind of begin to go astray with the concepts, with the ideas. And I've seen that in psychology. I mean, this is just natural Western thinking. Well, people begin to think, how can I test this on my own? How can I add different things to it? And so I have recently been on quite a few shows to talk about the importance of really making sure that when you learn these things, that you're learning it from someone that does have the credentials to be able to teach this stuff, because you wouldn't want to take psychology from someone who sat back and read a few books and taken a few seminars. You'd want to find a professor who's really good at it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and we'll have to get the keep the wines in this, but it's a really important thing. I mean, I like this point because it's a big issue. Because I mean, hanging around with Kabbalah people. I mean, I've studied lots of things, and been associated for years and years. Because the way my brain works is that for me, like everything, everybody tells the truth. It's just that they put restrictions they put blinds before them.
Hmm.
Fundamentalists are telling the truth. I mean, that's what they think they see. And it's what they see. They're not lying. That's what they see. But what you have to do is, it's kind of like when you're doing brain scanning sometimes, is you have to do a whole bunch of repetitive scans in order to extract out the noise. And then you see the real signal. And I've found for me that the more I study, the more I see things, the clearer the picture gets, because you start seeing where the contradictions are, and you kind of tracks out in your mind. And what I found over the years is it's not just it's a Western thing, but it's in, Kabbalah, it's in, mysticism a lot of times, that people that really aren't higher emotionals, is they get this whole idea about wanting to understand it. And for them in the West, understanding means knowledge. But
right,
we know, you and I know, that understanding doesn't mean knowledge. Understanding is the cognitive output of having a deep feeling about it, and you feel it first. It's real to you. And it's almost like, I hate the word unconscious, but it's an intuitive thing, so it's not conscious content. But if you
right.
study...
It's your subconscious, it's your unconscious, of course.
Yeah, but a lot of times in the West, unconscious, psychology has this other term, but that's okay. But then after a while, when you start looking at different models and ways to model it and test it, then you get the knowledge that sort of fits your feelings, which come from being associated with a school that has legitimate initiatory rights, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're really, really lucky, you've been around such a long time, that you've already been initiated 10,000 billion times, and so you have a natural affinity in your higher self, I think.
Right.
But that's a very rare person, and so it's dangerous to see those guys. And you're right about it. So many people just think knowledge means you just because you know facts that you own them, and they have some value. And facts are just facts. If you don't feel it, in your soul, so to speak. For me, man is it's the high feeling part of it, the emotion that drives, the motivators. People get misled, and I'm glad they had you on the show, because I'm sure you explained all that to them very well,
Well, yeah, oh no, and I thought that it was not only important to go on these shows, because one of the angles that people were beginning to take, the angle was, well, all of these, they even started labeling him this self-help guru. Right? That they're taking a very sacred word, guru. And I began meditating when I was 5. I loved this stuff. I begged my mom to teach me, and I meditated all the way, still to this day, but a more Eastern philosophy or approach from India.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to meet individuals like Baba Muktananda, an enlightened person from India. My father worked closely with his organization. And, I'm very fortunate growing up with these things. And when they would say things like, he's a self-help guru gone wrong, I had to go on these shows and really say, look, well, what's the saying? You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And, just one bad apple isn't indicative of the entire group. And I remember being on the Geraldo show and asked specifically some pretty direct questions about, well, how do you know when someone has credentials? And exactly what you said, I brought up, and that is there's two really important things. One, knowledge isn't power. Knowledge is only powerful if you know what to do with it. If you don't know what to do with it, it's just in a book weighing down your bookshelf. So you're looking for someone who is an example and practices what they teach and lives it rather than just talks about it. And then the second thing that's important is really trusting your gut. And that's what I think you're bringing up there. And I think that's a nice way of saying it from a Huna perspective. And that is the word na'au, your center. When something is right with you, your gut knows it. And when something is wrong with you, your gut knows it. And anyone that I've ever said, have you ever gone against your gut feeling? And they all laugh and go, yeah, I did. It didn't work out very well. Well, in ancient times in Hawaii, the most intelligent person was the one that could trust their gut, not the one that could outthink things. We're the opposite in Western thinking. Now, I don't believe that we should go back to the way things were. I love technology. I love the world that I live in. I love the fact that my wife and my daughter are able to fly over here to California today and spend time with me, and it doesn't take them a week to go by boat. The idea isn't to go back. The idea is, what were some of the concepts that they had in ancient times, and how do we bring it in and mesh it with our world? So it's not about trusting the gut more than the mind or vice versa. It's balancing the two. Trusting your gut as much as your intellect. So your intellect and gut equal.
Yeah, that's nicely stated. But if I could add one thing, you know, because I think, you know, in the West, when we say trust in your gut, it's almost, because, you know, I always talk, you know, especially yoga, solar plexus and that stuff, and, you know, there may be some truth to it, but it's getting a little bit specific for me. But what I noticed, too, is, and this probably fits into, you know, into the philosophical system, so correct me if I'm wrong, because, like I said, it's been years since I've actually, you know, you read a book on it, you know, or even talked to anybody. But, you know, what they find is, you know, at our lowest level, you know, we do have this kind of solar plexus, kind of automatic recognition if it feels right, safe, etc. But what I've been finding over the years is that there's a much higher level of so to speak, gut reaction, you know, which is intuition. And after a while, you just get, I guess, so attuned to things that you know, like, the answer, or you know what needs to be done, you know, and then you do it, and you see that it was a proper thing to do. And it's almost like there's a higher, you know, the higher self.
Higher self.
You know, actually, when you allow it to work, it actually, you know, works intuitively, because it doesn't talk to you per se, you know, but in, I guess, the middle self, I don't know what you guys would call it, middle self, but, you know, our intellectual mind, you know, has to put in words for it, you know, and make a plan to do the action. But this is really high level of trust. And I found...
Well, I think you're bringing up the concept of the unconscious mind and the higher conscious mind, or higher self, or the Hawaiian word, aumakua. And the interesting thing, and this is in every system that I have studied, every system, and I've gotten to work with a chief of the First Nation and his son, who had come and taken some trainings with us from Canada, and people from India, Indian descent, Native American, Western Hermetics, and I guess because of how long I've been in this and what I teach, I've been very honored to be able to meet these individuals. And every system that I've looked at, every system that I've studied, there is this idea that higher consciousness is not directly connected to the conscious mind. In other words, how you view your world, who I think I am, how I'm able to focus my attention from moment to moment. That's your conscious mind. Most studies now say that that's only about 5% of who you are. Now, psychology then attributes the other 95% to the unconscious mind, but Huna goes, a lot of it is your unconscious mind or your subconscious, whatever label you want to give it, right. But not the Freudian unconscious, the aspect of you that runs your body, stores your memories. That's your unconscious mind. That aspect of who you are, the unconsciousness, is connected to your higher self. And so when you do get a message from your higher self, it does run through your unconscious or subconscious to become consciously aware of it. And oddly enough, in all these systems, your unconscious mind lived, once Native Americans literally say it, lived in the gut, like a small little animal living in there. My friend, who's the son of the chief of the First Nation, said it sounds kind of funny, but they would actually view like your unconscious mind lived there in your belly, in your na'au, your center. So that's why it's about trusting your gut. And both higher self and the unconscious mind speak through there. So your perceptions, your gut reactions, that comes from that area, because that's where that aspect of your mind feels as if it's associated to.
Well, Matthew, because one thing I've noticed over the years is, I mean, I always say put your concepts aside and let's discuss the feelings when we talk, higher feelings, and then we'll come back and discuss what our ideas are, or else we'll never get anywhere. I mean, not in a conversation like this. But one of the things that I think is that thoughts are very, very, you know, systems direct you to think a certain way, and you know, it's not that it's wrong; it's just that's the way the words they used. And so then we start feeling what we think. Because when I've noticed with when I have a gut reaction about something, I mean, it definitely feels physiological. But if somebody asks me a question about something that I know, and I've never thought of that question, ever, because it wasn't important in my life at the time. But they ask you questions sometimes, and you just answer the question, you know. And then when you're done, you see what the answer was. And a lot of times, more often than not, it finds out that the answer is probably the exact right answer for the question, you know, at the person's level where they are. But you didn't think that; it just came out of there, and it's not a gut thing. It's I find it's just like this very peaceful comfortableness with higher self, in a sense, that, you know, when you're dealing with that, when your conscious mind needs to deal at that level, you know, it's not afraid of it, doesn't restrain it. The lower self doesn't overreact to it, you know, or physiologic. And it's actually this really pleasant feeling, but I can't give you a word for it because it's not like a regular feeling. You know, it's just...
No, I totally get it. I get it. George Naope, who we recently lost someone that was, you know, this connection to our ancient times. I routinely get asked about Huna and what makes Huna so special. And one of the things is that there's an unbroken lineage. The lineage that I carry, there was no gap between the practice and where we are now. And that you sometimes find that gap in other cultures, like Native American. Some cultures have a 200-300-400-year gap in the practice. And that was because there was that effort to wipe out some of the ancient teachings that kind of went around the planet. The concept that you bring up about trusting the gut and the importance of it and getting out of the way of the information, George Naope, who, founder of the Mary Monarch Hula Festival, he's the one that introduced my father to Papa Bray, recently passed away. He would say, as a kumu, as a teacher, the key isn't to overthink something. If anything, you've already thought about most of these things your entire life. How do you get out of the way of the information? How do you just let it flow through you? And from a psychology standpoint, that is getting your conscious mind out of the way and trusting that the information that you're sharing is right, is the Hawaiian word pono, is correct. And I do believe from a Huna perspective, when you get out of the way of that information like you're describing, it flows in from wherever it needs to, whether that's your own personal memories or connecting to something that is higher, that is a collective experience.
Yeah, but you bring, you know, because, you know, I mean, Kabbalah, they talk about this a lot, but the West, too, and some of the Eastern things about, you know, trying to put your ego aside, and, you know, and then again, all this Western thoughts about ego mixed into it, which is a little different than what the, you know, the Eastern guys weren't quite that specific. And so it made me curious, like, it brings that number talking about it. You know, it's really like putting your ego aside is stop saying no to everything. You know, it's not being a nicer person necessarily. It's not necessarily not liking things or liking things. You know, it's about this capability of just, you know, conscious mind realizing that it has limited capabilities, and that's okay because it's pretty powerful. But it's only as good as the information that comes into it. And I find it gives you a good feeling of comfort in the world because you know there's a lot more things you can count on no matter what happens to you.
Right, and that's just it. Whatever label you use, see, we use so many different labels that you brought up. You know, Jungian ego, that's one of the things that I studied in my degree for psychology. I really looked at the concept of Jungian psychology because it is probably the closest to ancient teachings. It is very esoteric by nature, which is why some, you know, psychoanalytical people that are more on the Freudian side, which you have far less now, but there was definitely a reaction to Jung's approach. And so we have these labels like the ego or the, you know, the conscious mind, or is it the unconscious, or is it the subconscious? And I think one of the things that Huna really says is that whatever you call it, however you view it, that's your own personal view of it. In other words, at the level of higher self, I once had a woman who was in my workshop here in Newport Beach. This was a few years ago, and I was talking about higher self, and she raised her hand, and she said, I don't like that term. And I went, okay, let's see, what term do you like instead? How about if I use the Hawaiian word, aumakua? And she said, nah, I don't like that. It's too confusing. And I went, okay. So I went in one direction, and I said, well, what about God or goddess? And she said, oh, no, I don't like that. And I went, okay, wrong direction. So I go in the opposite direction, and I say, how about collective? You know, the collective consciousness or the collective unconscious, the Jungian idea. And she said, I love that. I said, great. It's all the same thing. And she said, no, it's not. If it was all the same thing, everyone would say it the same way. And I went, no, it's all the same thing at that level. And here's why. I said to her, I'm a trainer right now, and you're looking at me like I'm teaching you, that I'm a teacher, or maybe you're looking at me like I'm a doctor. When I go home, how do you think my wife looks at me? And I know she's done some of these workshops, but she looks at me like I'm her husband. And then my kids, when they look at me, I have a 10-year-old and a 3-year-old, and when they look at me, I'm dad. I said, I'm not one of these people. I'm not all of them. How you view something is largely based on your reality. And so you look at the higher self, and if you're very religious, it seems very external and it seems like God. And if you're very spiritual, it seems more intimate, and the Eastern philosophy calls it the Atman, the Godhead, that is your own personal expression. In Hawaiian, you call it Aumakua. What Huna says is no one's right, no one's wrong. And in fact, in Western thinking, we spend too much time arguing over the label rather than truly tapping into how powerful we are. And so I think when you, like, what you've seen is you've looked at all these different systems and you see that common thread. That common thread is the more abstract view of, hey, we're all saying the same thing. I can't say anything new. I can't say anything different. I can just use different labels. And you need to find out which one resonates with you and go for it and just stick to it and pick that path.
And practice it more than think it.
Thank you. Yes, practice it daily. Make it your life. I mean, that's, I think people in Western society, they want something to make a difference. I get asked all the time, is Huna a quick fix? And I always go, there's no such thing as the quick fix. There's no such thing as the magic pill that will fix everything in our lives. And I know we really want one. However, Huna is a quick fix, meaning that you practice it, you can create change rapidly. It's a quick fix, though, that you have to practice every day of the rest of your life. Otherwise, it stops. And I researched Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian forgiveness process, validated that this thing works, which is rare that you have scientific validation of these spiritual techniques. And I have people come into the workshop and they do the process once and they go, will I ever have to do it again? And I said, that's the equivalent of me saying I had a salad yesterday. Will I ever have to eat healthy again?
I did breathing exercise today, so I have to do it again. Of course, you'll die if you don't.
Right, I know. So there are things out there that can make a profound difference in your life that when you add it to your life and make it a part of your life, that it does create that difference. And I think that's the difference that people are seeking for. People want to be happy. And they need to find something that makes them happy and then practice it, make it a part of their life.
I agree 100%. Well, Father, listen, I didn't say this before, but go to www.huna.com and you'll see Matthew's and all his friends and families and everybody else has a really great website. It talks about Huna, lists lectures he does, and some basics about it. But, you know, it's interesting because I was talking to a good Kabbalah friend last night, came over, and, you know, and one of the things, some of these big Kabbalists, and they actually have big groups, and they're actually pretty good. I mean, they don't try to make money off and things, and they kept going, well, you know, we want to get enough, they keep going, we want to get enough nucleus of awakened people, you know, to, like, change the world and everything else, you know, and everybody talks about this, and, you know, so I was telling them, let me tell you something. I'm going to share a little secret with you that none of these guys know, because it's, like, too weird. I said, everything is upside down in the world, like Gurdjieff said. It's people say something, and when they say it, this actually should be interpreted the opposite way. The words mean the exact opposite of what they say, you know, because we don't know, you know, what's going to happen. You know, you don't know. Why would you be so vain to think that we should change how humanity lives its life overall? I'm not saying have better health care. I'm not saying taking care of people. But, you know, we don't know what the end of the universe is going to be for sure. We don't know what consciousness could be like at the end of the universe. So why would we want to over-restrict it? You know, we can use our wisdom and our inner touch with the higher self to make little adjustments personally to a few people, you know, if it seems like it's getting out of line. But human vanity, you know, is what makes us problems. And so they go, you know, I'll just talk about, you know, tests, all these systems they have, like, you know, Rosicrucians, whatever. I said, you know, forget that stuff. It's useful. But, you know, if you look at every single spiritual teaching, every single true philosophical teaching, in my opinion, every religious system, they only teach one thing, and Huna says it well. You know, do no harm to anybody else, which I translate into, is all our job is to do is to practice the maximum goodness we know how to the benefit of everybody to the best of our ability, period.
Yep.
End of story. If you do that, you don't have to know why. You don't have to know how. you can learn how to do it. And so this whole mystical school is in religious is really a very pragmatic side. But our conscious minds like to talk about things, like to understand why, come with models, which is good. You know, that attracts a lot of people into it because it's fun. But it's basically about, you know, the core of the teachings, which is don't try not to harm anything, including yourself.
And I think that's it. And I think that's just, you know, be happy, be good. And Huna says that suffering is the opposite of spirituality. One of the things that is built into some of our Western thinking and our Western thought process is that the world is a place that is meant to be suffered. And if you're suffering, that must mean you're spiritual in some way, shape, or form. And I've had people say that to me, and I sit there and I say, with all love and respect, what Huna says is that if you're suffering, that's a clue that you're heading in the wrong direction. And what Huna actually says is you should see the world as perfect as it is. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't feel compelled to change things. If you want to leave the world a better place, that's actually a part of the path as well. But rather than seeing the world as this awful place, Huna says the world's a great place. Every day, it's your job. How do you make it better? And everything begins with you. Everything begins with you. And I've met people that go, you know, I'm studying with so-and-so, and our mission is to get people more conscious. And I went, all 6 billion of them?
Not just two. Okay, that might work.
I said, you know what you got to do? You got to start with yourself and get yourself more conscious. And I think that's a Western approach, which is this path is the best path. This is the way. Oh, if everyone just knew this. And I got to admit to you, when I first started doing Huna, and I was in my teenage years, I had some enlightened moments where I went, this is it. Why doesn't everyone do Huna? And I think some teachers, they wake up, you get a little bit of consciousness, and you think, this is phenomenal. Why doesn't everyone know this? And then they go out and attempt to teach that path. In doing so, though, they find other people who also have a very wonderful path and get into a lovely argument with them. My path's better. No, your path is not right. My path is right. No, that we call it Aumakua. It's not supposed to be called higher self. No, it's supposed to be called higher. You know what I mean? And they argue. they argue over the path. And the funny thing is Huna says that all paths lead to the same place. They all lead to the light. And just like we have so many different languages and so many different ways of approaching life and so many different cultures on the planet, we also have so many different paths. And the goal shouldn't be to get more people on your path. In fact, it's your path and your path alone, even if there's a similar feel to it. The goal should be, how do I step down and continue to move down my path? Because when you do, you will attract other people to you to find out what you are doing.
You know, I was probably about 25, it was before I went to medical school, I was still a chemical engineer. So I got involved with this research people in California. They were doing self-hypnosis things, and they're doing, you know, like astroscene.
Uh-huh.
So I go, okay, the guy asked me, want to do it? I said, yeah, I don't care, I'll try it out. You know, I'm sure there's something interesting to learn here. And I have this nice knack that you know, if you ask me, do you ever talk to aliens? I say, yes, I've talked to aliens. But at the same time, my brain's going, how can I be talking to them? They're not in front of me, not physically in front of me. So
yeah.
It's just information. I can't say anything physically. You know, psychically I can say something, but I can't say anything in the physical world because it's a different world. But it never bothered me to have like two thoughts in my head at the same time that were exactly fighting each other. And so these guys would go and do, you know, some things with dolphins. And, you know, so a lot of interesting things happened that actually are hard, difficult to explain. You know, were, like, verified. But one thing I noticed is when they're getting together, because they're kind of getting together and trying to form what they call group mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which they didn't really, like, I asked them, they didn't really know what it's all about. But the first thing I noticed was that when we got into self-relaxation, I mean, you know, in hypnosis, we did ourselves with these people that were all kind of attuned. So the first thing I noticed, I go, this is really interesting because, like, it's not that I feel anybody else's mind. I can't feel anybody else's mind. All I can feel things through my own mind, my own awareness. You know, and so it has to be that way. Everybody's awareness is unique in a sense. Even though awareness is everywhere, you know, our machines or brains, you know, give us one point of view at it. And I was going, I can understand now how it must be a true noetic experience, intellectually speaking. Is what happens is when you connect with other people, it's as if you can use their awareness through your own brain and actually do more with it. so you're more perceptive, you're a little smarter in a sense, if you know how to use it. And I'm going, this is really cool, because now I see how higher beings would actually work that are in the world, is that most people think we only use our brain with our own energy. But actually, when you're connected at this higher level, which is the same for everybody, I think, in a sense. It's not energy. I don't know what to call it. I'll call it energy, but it's just continuous, undifferentiated.
Mm-hmm.
That you can actually.
There are so many different ways to explain that. Yeah. I mean, you're right. And it's just, the quantum physics calls it, well, some people in the field of quantum physics call it the M field, the morphogenic field. And that is that at a deeper level, we're all connected. Jung called it the collective. And that when you are around people who think in a similar way, who have a certain level of consciousness, that group of people together can affect not just the overall group think, but the overall experience of reality around them. And so definitely, and I think some enlightened individuals know how to tap into that. They know how to be with a group and really tap into that. So you're right. I agree.
You know, so it's kind of nice, and you know this. Eventually, science, or as an ideological position, you know, not how scientists are because we're all human, but I think one day it's true, open-minded, get data, do things, look at inside experiences, outside experiences, write them down, look, you know, analyze them, talk to people, so the whole person's left into it, that someday all this ancient stuff is going to be boiled down to some very, very simple physics, and I'm not just saying material physics, I think there's some stuff missing to the system. And it's actually going to be a very, very simple system that has always been more complexly explained in the past because, you know, in the past, people were much more concrete, less abstract than now because they didn't have writing, for one. But what they felt in the words they tried to see it, you know, the pictures they see, when you have the feeling, you can sort out the words. You know, and it's going to be like such a simple solution at the end, I think, that everybody's going to go, wow, how could we be so dumb?
Well, I think life is a lot simpler than we make it out to be. I think we're actually getting there. I think that day is coming up pretty soon because life is so much simpler than we make it out to be. We overly complicate things. That's not to say that we don't deal with complex concepts in our world. We do. Getting a computer up and running, how do you even put a computer together? We deal with these.
Don't ask me.
Yeah, don't ask me either. That's not my realm. But I once made the mistake. I was in a workshop. I'm teaching over on the East Coast. I think I was in Atlanta, actually, where you are.
Next time you come here, you have to send me an email so I know, and I'll come visit for sure.
Yeah, I love Atlanta. It's beautiful over there. I think we were in Atlanta, and I was doing a workshop. This must have been about 10 years ago now. And I said, look, HUNA's really simple. It's not like physics. Well, I've learned to keep my foot out of my mouth a little bit better as I've gotten older because a guy walked up to me on break, and he said, I'm a physicist, and I went, ooh. And he said, physics is simple. And I went, I beg to differ. I took physics in high school, and I thought I was kind of smart guy. And he said, well, the problem then wasn't with the physics, it was with your physics teacher. And I went, oh, interesting. And he said, look, physics is simple. You got to know four basic laws. And if you know these four basic laws, he got about 90 to 95% of the physics or the how the world works down. He said that other 5 to 10%, depending on which textbook you read, it's about 5 or 10% is what he called, you know, fringe or quantum, or he said the weird stuff. He said that, by the way, is why people are drawn to this and spend their life studying it. And I went, that's HUNA. I mean, that's exactly how Daddy Bray described HUNA. Daddy Bray said, the world is really simple. You just need to know these four basic truths, these four basic assumptions or laws of HUNA empowerment, and you got 90 to 95% of your life down. In fact, in ancient Hawaii, these four concepts were known, and the kahuna was the one that intimately knew the other 5 to 10%, and that's why you didn't need to call on the kahuna 90 to 95% of the time, because you could just solve it yourself.
Actually, since we've got that nice part, could you spend some time telling all of us a little bit about, after years of experience, simplifying things down to the things we really need to know, what it is?
Oh, absolutely. The first one is called the law of correspondence, and that is that perception is projection, as above, so below, that the world is a reflection of you, and you are a reflection of the world. And you need to know this. And let me simplify it, because I've read books that have the book Flow by Mahalia Csikszentmihalyi is a great book, and it's very scientific, and it talks about you only have 2 million bits per second, and you only get 126 of them. Rather than overly complicating a simple concept, here's how it goes. If you wake up in a bad mood, and we all have, the world looks different than when you wake up in a good mood. I mean, literally, everything down to how you experience nature changes based on your mood. Why is that? It's because of the law of correspondence, and that means that there's a connection between what's inside and outside. And so you're literally experiencing the bulk of your world inside. The second law is the law of cause and effect. And that is that your actions have a reaction, and that in life, either you realize that you're the sum total of all of your decisions and everything you want to do in the future, that you're that sum total of those two things, and that at some level, you've created everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the happy, and the wonderful, and the love, and the joy, you've created it. The key is to learn why you created it. The third law is the law of creation, and that is the world is made up of opposites. And you brought up a really good point of reconciling this, and that there is conflicting ideas, conflicting truths, and you said you can hold that in mind and it doesn't bother you. Daddy Bray actually said the kahuna is the person that can hold conflicting truths in their mind without any conflict, knowing that it's true, both are true, and neither are false. And that's called the law of creation, and that is that there are these dichotomies. And then the fourth law is the law of cycles and rhythm. And the law of cycles and rhythm says that between these dichotomies, there's a movement of energy, and that energy exists, and that just like a battery in a car, there's a flow of energy between the two poles or the two opposites. These are the four laws that pretty much everyone knew. And the law of cycles and rhythms is really simple. We see that in nature, by the way. It's daytime right now. The sun's up. When the sun goes down, I don't walk outside and get angry because the sun should be up. But a lot of people know that there's a natural cycle and rhythm, for example, in their relationship, and know that their partner may not be in the mood to talk or in the mood to talk. And rather than realizing that's a natural cycle, they fight it. And they try to think, well, this person should be a different way. But that would be like walking out and cursing the sun for not being in the sky. It's just people have natural cycles and rhythms internally and externally. Now, I know the big thing is the law of attraction. And I teach that as well. However, the law of attraction doesn't make any sense unless you have these four down. Because if you don't get that you're the creator of your universe, that the universe is a reflection of you, that conflicting truths are okay, and that energy exists and cycles between the opposites, you're not going to be able to attract anything to you because you might end up actually attracting the things you don't want.
Which is what usually happens.
Exactly. And so, I mean, those are the four simple. And by the way, in ancient times in Hawaii, people just knew it. So when you went to go see the kahuna, you wouldn't have to hear those again. I open up my workshops by teaching these four things, and I teach it every time because we don't have these taught in high school. We don't have these taught in elementary school. We don't teach kids that there is an observer effect. We used to, Newton thought that we were separate from our universe, and we're not. They've proven the observer effect through studies on placebo. So we're beginning to come back to these four basic concepts, and I think once they're known, that it really will simplify a lot of things.
Mr. Matthew, have you ever read a book called The Kybalion? It's like K-Y-B-A-L-I-O-N.
No, I have not.
Actually, you would love this book. It's maybe 130 pages. It's like seven laws, but it was probably written like in the 20s. But I think it was by a guy named Ramak Chakara, but that might not have been a person, you know. Because I think it was actually written by three Rosicrucian people. But nobody knows for sure. But it talks about, you know, the seven basic principles of Hermetic philosophy of Egypt. And the four you mentioned are also in this book.
Oh, how neat.
And it's one of those books that, like, they should have given you more blank pages to write stuff in. Because it's so condensed. I mean, you know, it's condensed. But it talks about, you know, the universe being a mental construct in a sense, you know, the cause and effect. They talk about gender, too. But you'd probably like it because I know one of the things is my bias is everything basically came out of Egypt anyway. There's some place, at least that was the last place we could record it for sure. You know,
yeah, every culture, I think, claims that everything came from them. There's a story of, in Hawaii, the lost continent of Mu, and that the Hawaiian Islands were the tips, and that this was the healing center where everything came from. And I go talk to someone, you know, from India, and they say, oh, no, there's this place in India where everything came from. And I think everyone claims that because everything did come from one location at one point. All teachings come from a single source. And I've sat down with people who claim a lineage, that their lineage is the oldest, and we get to talking and we go, okay, there's no way we can actually verify this. Let's all get to one agreement, that is that there's a similarity because there are some basic truths in the universe, like those four laws, like the ones you talked about in this book, and they all did come from one location. But we're never going to prove where it came from, so when a student usually asks me that, do you think it all came from Hawaii or Egypt, I say, you know what, that's great to sit around and talk about. What I'm here to talk about, though, is how do you take these laws and put them into your life? Because whether they came from Egypt or Hawaii, they're powerful. And I would be okay having it proven that it came from anywhere, so long as you were able to work with it and practice it.
It came from nowhere.
Yeah, or it came from nowhere. Yeah. It's not that I don't care. You know, I think that's my job to learn those things and read the books and study it. And I think unless that's what you're going to delve your life into, I think the student should focus less on that and more on how do I take these things and apply it to my life.
Yeah, because academic life is, I mean, has its, you know, it's academics exist for a particular reason, but it exists, you know, it's like law. I unfortunately have to deal with the legal system. I'm not a lawyer, but one of the things I learned is that everything that they owe the legal system has to be taken within the system of the legal system. You can't go outside.
Right.
So no matter how stupid it is, you got to go by the inside rules, which you think lawyers will go by what the law actually says, but they always go stupid case law crap, which, you know, it's because they're liars and they're cheaters, and they don't really care what the law really says. They just want to win in general, but that's, I get past that. But it's funny because maybe last year, maybe 2 years, I don't remember, but one of my associates works at the school I work with, and used to ask me questions, and I said, I don't want to know what the questions are in advance because it's no fun for me. Because I will think about it instead of just intuit it. And so he goes, okay, Michael, could you define what spirituality is? I stop for a second. I go, yep, that's actually pretty easy to do, but it's opposite what you think, because I think most everything is opposite. And I go, you know, spirituality is not something you do outside of your world. The more spiritual a person is means the more they're embodied, their whole being is embodied in the physical world. It's how they live their life. It's about living. There's nowhere else to go. It's here. And, you know, people start to get out of their heads in this imaginary virtual world and actually get in the closest, you know, make the virtual world as close as we can to the physical, the actual world of the universe, which we don't really know, but we can try, and get really, really fully embodied in it. And then we're going on, and I'm saying, you know, people want to make God do this, and I said, you don't need to. I can answer every question you want just from the simplest models of physics, thermodynamics, for example. I don't need quantum mechanics. I don't need this fancy stuff. You go like, why do we all have an aversion generally to killing each other? Well, you know, I'd say everything's come out of the physical universe. So if I look at the equivalent in the physical universe, the answer is conservation of energy. You know, systems don't like to waste things. So I can see in the natural world, you know, the basic law, it's reflected in our human consciousnesses because it partially developed out of that. So I don't have to make these magical stories up and, you know, these more things I can't prove. To live a good moral life. You know, it's like, for me, it's built into the system. The universe is what it is, and everything is here.
That's exactly
supposed to be, and I don't have to make a story about it.
No, that's exactly it. And So first of all, I'm going to ask for the Hawaiian word, the Hawaiian phrase, e kala mai iao, please forgive me, and your listeners as well. Growing up, I actually spent a portion of my life thinking I wanted to be a police officer, and sometimes people look at me and go, what? But I grew up in Hawaii, so, I mean, they had Hawaii 5-0, Magnum P.I.
They had some good shows. We're not kids, you know.
And so then people laugh, and they go, okay, I see it now. And, you know, as a teenager, I kind of began to move away from that. And in my 20s, I definitely, but I still had this affinity for the law, and I actually have an undergraduate degree in criminal justice.
Oh, cool.
And one of the first things that you learn is that ignorance of the law is not a defense. Ignorance of the... You can't go to a foreign country and jaywalk and claim I didn't know. And so I bring that up when I talk about the laws of Huna empowerment, like the law of correspondence that you just talked about, that the reason why physics does apply to the spiritual is because of the law of correspondence, as above, so below. Laws that apply to the physical are going to be very similar, if not exactly the same, as laws in the spiritual. And I said, you know, a lot of people sit there and they deny it. I had one person about 5 years ago in a Newport Beach training saying to me, there's no such thing as energy, you can't prove it. And so I said, okay. I said, you're right. I can't flow energy from my hand that you would be able to see. I mean, some people can see it, but you wouldn't be able to see it, and therefore you're saying it's not real. And he goes, right. And I went, that's fantastic. I said, have you ever woken up one day with a billion things to do and you had no energy to do it? And he goes, yeah. He goes, but I drank a lot of coffee. I went, okay, good. Good for you. And I said, have you ever woken up with a day where you have nothing to do and you have so much energy you're fidgety? And he goes, yeah. And I said, that's proof to me. See, you know what energy is. We name drinks like the 5-hour energy drink or, you know, come get your energy boost with this bar or something. I said, you know the effects of energy. You just don't like the word, or you've been so trained that this stuff is outside of our conscious awareness. We can't see it here. We can see the effects of it, though. We can feel the effects of it. And so the key here, and I think you brought it up in your first analogy of being a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. My background's in HUNA and psychology. But I know enough about the law to keep me safe, to keep me out of trouble, I guess would be the phrase that my mother would use. I know enough to keep me out of trouble, and I also know when I don't know enough to go hire an attorney. That's how practices were in ancient times in Hawaii. You knew enough to keep yourself happy, to keep yourself going, and when you knew you didn't know, you went to go see the expert. You went to go see the kahuna, and they would assist you, and then you'd go back to your life. And it's kind of like that. Maybe the attorney is not the best analogy because some people don't like attorneys, but think of a happy attorney in a nice area.
Or a good or a truly enlightened psychologist.
There we go.
You know, he teaches the fundamentals. You know, I got hypnosis, a good example. You teach them how to do hypnosis, help them teach how to solve the problem. You know, then what you're hoping is that they actually realize that this technique is something you use all the time. You don't have to come back. But they never seem to get that part. But when they come back, you know, you kind of review a little bit like you do in your courses. Review, you know, like general life principles and say, okay, this is the part where you're not quite applying it properly. So go do this and come back if you need to. And it's quite simpler than people think, you know.
It is. It is so simple. And you're right. It's about you go and you find this information. You bring it into your life. It's rather simple. And you make it a part of your life. And when you need someone, there are times that I've needed someone to talk to. And then there are times where you need to go inside. HUNA says you need to know three things. You need to know where you came from. You need to know your lineage, because your lineage is your foundation. It is your history. And it does bring a certain level of mana or energy into your life. You need to know who you are. In our world, in our Western fast-moving society, we sometimes don't stop to find out who we are. Who are we meant to be? And then you need to focus on what you are doing now. We live in a world that is so, here's what I'm doing tomorrow. I worked with a person in San Diego. This was just in a weekend training. And she said, I'm not getting anything out of my job. And I said, I'm just taking a guess here. How much time in your job do you spend thinking about other jobs? And she said, a lot. And I said, so if you spend 50% of your time in your job thinking of other jobs, you wonder why you don't get 100% out of your job? If you're only putting 50% in, you're only going to reflect 50% coming back. In your relationship, in your health and fitness, in your career, put 100% in. It doesn't mean that you're going to do it forever. It doesn't mean that you're stuck doing that or that you're not stuck doing it. It just means that when you're doing something, be there fully. Know where you came from, know who you are, and focus on what you're doing. And that will bring in a tremendous amount of mana and energy.
You know, I'm sure you know this, but a lot of people, I find when you talk to them, because we're really very free with our words, you know, because we just take them on, you know, vernacular level and stuff. And so when you brought the word energy, you know, I mean, what they don't realize is physics has nothing to do about objects.
You know, so energy.
I mean, forget quantum mechanics, okay? All the words in physics, when they talk about energy, because energy is a non-observable, but in physics, energy is, and the same thing in spirituality, energy is defined as the capacity to do some work at some level. And so, you know, your explanation to that person is really, well, this is what you can do or you can't do. You know, but people want to make things nouns instead of processes, and that's where I think a lot of us get in trouble, because as soon as I call a thing and think it's a thing, I've limited it rather than a process, because a process is very open-ended. You know, how you do work, there's lots of different kinds of work you can do. You know, and you don't realize you have to get food or go exercise or...
It's all energy, yeah.
You know, I mean, go something up inside to do it. But it's really, you know, it's everything we do is really based on behavior and what we observe, you know, and then we go back and think about it. And so I just wanted to mention that to the listeners because...
Well, there was a great show on the Discovery Channel yesterday. I'm over here in Newport Beach, and so I'm in my hotel room sometimes, and all of a sudden, in my hearing, I heard this show, and so I turned up the volume a little bit. I don't watch a lot of TV, but it was a great show on physics, and there was a one-hour show on energy. And every physicist that came on, none of them were spiritual, none of them were, you know, they weren't talking woo-woo here. They all literally got on the show and said, everything in the universe is about energy. That's just it. I mean, from the moment of the Big Bang all the way up till now, and they gave example after example. They talked about food, they talked about an automobile crashing. They said, you're thinking that it's all metal, and you're thinking that once the crash is done, that it's done. They said, no, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be transformed, and our entire existence can be boiled down to energy. And I'm sitting there, my eyes are so wide, and I'm going, Huna, that's Huna. Huna says, everything boils down to energy. That's just it. You delve into any concept of the mind, body, or spirit, it's energy. And I'm like jumping up and down going, okay, well, physics and Huna are on board with each other.
You know, that's a really nice story. Because one of my pet peeves, being that I'm quite a good physicist, is when, you know, Chopra and all these guys, the New Age guys, you know, keep talking about quantum mechanics. They have no conception of quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
At all. And they're just using these words because they really think they know something, makes it magical. But actually, it takes all these guys, when they put quantum mechanics into it, I think there's some place we can put it, but you got to really understand what the words mean, you know, the concepts and the arguments, and, you know, in physics. And then you sort of like put them all in your brain together and say, well, okay, if you look at all these five things at one time, then you know what I'm talking about. If you can't do it, then don't listen to what I'm saying to you, because you won't understand. You can't understand yet. But it's basically the basic physics stuff. Conservation,
right.
Energy, work, transformations, you know, entropy. You know, and if the people stick to that level, which is a lot easier to understand because it's phenomenological, I think all of us would do better instead of trying to make up everything more magic. Why make the universe magical when it's such a magnificently awesome thing as it is?
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, I talk about quantum physics a little bit in my trainings, and I always start off by saying, I'm not a physicist. I'm not a quantum physicist. And I said, in fact, I'm only bringing this up because of movies like What the Bleep Do We All Know? And, you know, or What the Bleep Do You Know? That's the exact title. But so many people have read, you know, Chopra's work, quantum biology. It's such a buzzword. And I always start off by going, look, I'll talk a little bit about it, but let's really talk about physics, because there's so much power in physics. And physics is saying the same thing, and that's something that you can really wrap your mind around. To me, physics is that 90 to 95% that people need to know, and quantum physics is like being a kahuna. It's like the deeper issue in Huna, and that's when you incorporate that. That's my life. That's what I study. And so it's really about balancing those two. So I love that. That's great.
I think if we actually understood the simplest of physics in the world, then that we have 95%, so we only need kahunas like you to help us understand a little bit higher level of it. But Matthew, what's going to happen? The music's going to go off in a second, and everybody out there, go to www.huna.com. But I would like to talk to you for like 2 minutes afterwards, if I may, because I know you're busy.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Anytime you'd like to come back or anything we can do for you, go to office@mindbrainbody.com and send us some stuff. We'll put like a little free advertising thing on there, the links to wherever you want. But not just the link, but if you have a picture and stuff, we actually put pictures and stuff on there, a little bit of explanation. If you want. You don't have to.
Thank you for joining Dr. Michael John Kell on Mind, Brain, and Body. Please tune in next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of Mind, Brain, and Body, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Thanks again for listening.